second hour of We the People Radio. My name is Aaron Ryan.
And I'm Bill Cundiff.
Well, Bill.
Aaron.
So the first hour we chatted with Brian Reisinger, talking about family farms. So if you missed that, we also had a little chat about wolves. It prompted somebody to call us that we haven't heard from in many years. But it's always good to know he's still listening. Super fun. This hour, our guest is Troy Payne. And Troy is somebody that I see a lot, but we've never done radio. And I don't know why that is. That's really dumb. Why did we not do that?
I don't know. It's your show.
Good answer.
Way to blame. Right at the beginning, Troy.
Throw down.
Right at the beginning. Knife in the back. So the Veterans Service Office is probably in a county near you. And I realize that it's something I deal with a lot, but – we have a lot of people out there who either don't know how it works. They might be veterans. They might not. You have people who know veterans and want to make sure that they get accurate information and claims for benefits. So we thought, gee whiz, let's have Troy come in and educate us on this. So let's see. Hold on here, Troy. I know some things about you. I didn't actually get your bio, by the way, but I did steal it from online.
Oh, well, that's scary.
From the county website, though, so I figured it was pretty accurate. Well, I don't know. Maybe that is scary.
I thought you were going to say the post office.
No. Nope.
Not
there? Okay. No.
No, I had those taken down.
No, it was taken down. Okay.
Yeah. It was a guy on the street. So you're a Shasta County native.
Yes, ma'am.
So we blame Shasta County for anything that goes wrong here. Since Bill and I are not Shasta County natives, thank goodness. You were raised in Redding and Anderson. Those are the only two towns I've lived in Shasta County. So maybe we're sort of traveling the same roads here. After graduating from Anderson High School in 1988, he joined the U.S. Army. So we just outed you on your age. So he graduated in 1988. So you're roughly 10 years younger than I am. Joined the U.S. Army. We want to know why that happened. Where you served as a military police officer with postings in Texas, Germany, and Georgia.
That is all accurate.
Yeah, so did you, just out of curiosity, it seems like a long way to get to Georgia to go to Germany first. That seems like...
I took the scenic route.
Yeah, seems like a kind of a circular tour there. And I was honorably discharged in 1995, which is always important, and returned home to pursue studies in administration of justice at Shasta College. Joined the County Veterans Service Office in 2015, so roughly 10 years ago, and now is the County Veterans Service Officer.
That is all accurate.
So I did not put in here what it is you do or any of those good things, so I thought maybe we start at the beginning, eh?
I can do that.
All right. Hit it, Troy.
First, I'd like to just say it's nice that we have an actual veteran running the Veterans Service Office.
Yes, that is super important.
Yeah.
And it's extra nice you're actually here in the studio, so you any unnecessary silences is us with our hand over Troy's mouth, but mostly we won't be doing that.
You know me so well.
And the hijinks continue. No, but seriously, so if you were going to do the elevator speech on someone says, well, what do you do for a living? Like, what would you tell them?
Well, the first thing I want to touch on is what Bill just said.
Oh, sure. Go back
about
to Bill.
About it being nice that it's actually a veteran running the office.
Yes, that's true.
Here in California, that's a requirement. So the Veterans Service Officer for each county has a regulatory mandate to be a veteran themselves.
Great.
Now, the Veterans Services Representatives.
So staff of.
Staff of.
Yes.
Do not necessarily have to be veterans.
Okay.
But fortunately, here in Shasta County, our board and our leadership really back the fact that all of our veteran service representatives are veterans. We only have two non-veteran support staff members in our office out of the eight that are employed.
Right.
Nice.
Well, it just makes sense. I mean, you have to be able to relate to what's coming your way.
Correct. And that's one of the biggest questions that we get when somebody brand new walks in the office is, are you a veteran?
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah.
They ask you.
Yeah, we hear that quite a bit.
Well, they want to make sure they don't have to reinvent the wheel and explain.
Yeah, a lot of them want to set the stage for, their understanding or the representative understanding where they're coming from.
Right.
So fortunately for us, we've got three of the five branches represented in our office. And over the years that I've been there, we've had all but the Coast Guard that's been represented in our office. I don't know that we've had in my tenure, we've not had any Coasties, but.
And if we were going to do a little known facts, the thing that is often misunderstood is that you are, employees of the county.
That is correct.
It is a county office. This is not the VA.
Correct.
You are not the VA, although you process VA claims for benefits.
That's correct. We are accredited and we are vetted by the VA in order to have access to VA systems so that we can track those claims while they're burning at the VA.
That's languishing, I believe, is the word we want to use.
So back to your original question, Aaron, and I appreciate that. Our office is focused on veterans benefits. Our primary mission is veterans disability and pension claims. Those claims that have revenue to that veteran from the federal government. But we are also there to advise on education benefits, dependent education benefits, healthcare benefits, home loan benefits, you name it, we've got the access to be able to explain that stuff.
So you're pretty much first point of contact for a veteran. If he has an issue, he goes to you, or does he go directly to a veteran's office run by the government?
No, I would recommend that any veteran that's having any type of questions, I won't even call them issues because a lot of them aren't. They're just lack of knowledge questions.
Right.
Come down to – go see your local VSO wherever you are. If you're here in Shasta County, come see us.
Veteran Service Officer for the – we should say that at the beginning. VSOs are Veteran Service Officers.
Yeah. Go see your Veteran Service Office. And at least get your questions answered, because that person should be able to give you some food for thought and be able to fill in those gaps that you've got questions about or other angles of those questions that you may not even have thought of.
Mm-hmm. Now, do you actually help them fill out forms and paperwork?
We actually do it for them.
You do it for them?
Absolutely. Okay. We've got everything. We run on a system in California that is a statewide system. It's developed by a company called Panasoft. And once that veteran has been registered in that system, there's a little bit of delay, but they can be transferred to any county. So as long as they stay within California, any California county that they now reside in can get access to everything that the previous county did for them.
Oh, okay. That's fun.
Absolutely. Right. And that's a time saver. Correct. That is run through CalVet, California Department of Veterans Affairs, contracts with this company in order to do that. So that makes it really almost seamlessly, they're able to transition from, say, Shasta County and they move to Kern County. Kern County just notifies Shasta County that, hey, this veteran now resides down here. Can we please transfer those files? We contact Panasoft, let them know of the relocation. They flip a couple of switches behind the scene, and now Kern County has access to everything that we did in Shasta County.
Now, what's the difference between what you do and what a Department of Veterans Affairs does?
So there really isn't a huge difference as far as the claims representatives that work for VA. We all have the same duties, if you will. Mm-hmm. However, within California, with the massive population of veterans that we have, there are only three district offices for VA in the state. Mm. There's one in Oakland, one in LA, and one in San Diego.
Oh, wow.
So those more rural counties, rural areas throughout the state, if they wanted to do their claims directly through the VA, would have to travel to one of those locations in order to get that assistance.
Right.
With the 59 counties of California, there are 56 VSOs currently, because Monterey and San Benito share a VSO, Inyo and Mono share a VSO, and currently Sierra does not have one.
So they can't just
one.
they don't have the funds to support their
Correct.
Own office. So you guys travel.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. Yeah. We focus on Shasta County, all the county's veteran service officers. They try to focus on the residents within their county.
Sure.
However, if a county goes black for a few days waiting for a transition, another VSO is not going to turn that veteran away if they show up at their office.
Because you would still have access to their information.
We would at least have access through the federal side of their information. Correct.
Okay. All right.
It's kind of important because I hear from people on a regular basis. Well, I just went online, especially our younger folks. I went on the one end, we have the older people that are like, they a lot of times are not online people, so they're a little hamstrung because the VA system requires them to use apps and things like that.
Yes.
But then you have kind of a converse problem where you have the younger veterans get out and they're like, I don't need a stinking VSO. I'm going to file it myself. And I'm going to go online and do it. Let's talk about how that works out.
So
a lot of times.
You know, I'll be honest, Aaron. It really depends on how their out processing goes.
That's true.
Because they have the armed forces across the country have the transitional assistance program or TAPS. But TAPS really is good or bad depending on where you're discharging from. So what TAPS is, it's a week or two of classes to kind of inform you about your benefits and that kind of thing as you're exiting before you actually get that final DD-214 in your hand. And in major locations such as San Diego, Fort Hood, Texas, Fort Bragg, North Carolina, these really large posts, their TAPS classes seem to be a lot better, more informative. They have a higher attendance rate. But if you get out someplace like myself, Fort McPherson, Georgia, we didn't even have a TAPS class when I got out. Now, granted, that was 1995, but, and it's developed way more now, but they didn't even offer transitional training. Because as we all realize, they teach you how to be a sailor, a soldier, a Marine.
Right.
They don't teach you how to not be. And so that's kind of what TAPS was developed for. Mm-hmm. But again, it's very territorial depending on where you're getting out. If you're getting out of a remote station or someplace that's a little less advanced, you're not getting that same information. So a lot of these veterans, they jump on YouTube, they jump on TikTok, they jump on all these modern sites, and they're trying to pick up that information on their own. And there's some good information out there, and there's some bad information out there. We tend to pick up a lot of the ones that have filed their own claims, got a few denials on those claims. So once we attain access to their federal files, we can go back through all of those and review what VA's decisions were, why they were, the missing information was. Mm-hmm. And then we're very successful at appealing those and coming back with positive decisions on those.
Good.
So, but it's more time eaten up through the VA system on having to appeal things versus getting them right the first time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So you mentioned, the DD-214. Mm-hmm. Somebody walks in your office and says, hey, I'm a veteran. Does that form, do they have to have that in hand or no?
And what is it? Let's make sure we do that too.
So the DD-214 is the official discharge mm-hmm. from all the branches of service. And it's not it's not a deal breaker if they don't have it in hand. I get a lot of older veterans that say, you know, I've moved 14 times. I don't have my DDT 14 anymore. We can help them order that from the National Archives.
Okay.
We can assist them with that. The VA is transitioning now to where we've got multiple storage locations, but we're all up to speed on those. A lot of veterans that were in the Air Force, a lot of their records are still at Randolph Air Force Base. A lot of Army veterans are still at the Army Personnel Command at Fort Knox, Kentucky. So we can help them navigate how to get that in hand. The biggest problem with the federal government right now, and I understand when it comes to this, Aaron, is my older veterans, they've gone to a login. You have to be able to have either ID.me or the gov,
whatever the other one is. ID.me. I think it's IRS is using it too.
Well, IRS, Social Security.
I think I ran into this again the other day. And we'll get into
another problem with that down through this, but
let's take a quick break and we can mull over the problems with the federal government. You have 2 minutes to make your list. Pick the big things. Oh my God, it's a list too long to make. I'm sorry, I'm lying. Don't do that. Go get a snack. We'll be right back. And so just throw a shiv to my my friend Troy. We're gonna go out with a special song for him. You're listening to We the People. You can find us at wethepeopleradio.us.
Tell you what you do. Call him a rave. Some douchebag rises up and overthrows his government. Diplomacy ain't working and ammo's all been spent. The world is in a crisis and the media's a curse. I'll tell you what to do when it goes from bad to worse. Call a Marine, instead of 911. They're built to improvise, adapt and overcome. When you're in knee deep and you're up shit's creek, you've tried everything. Tell you what you do. Call a Marine. Tell you what to do, baby. You can.
We hang out with people just like you. My hair's turning white, my neck's always been red, my collar's still blue. We've always been here, just trying to sing the truth to you. Guess you could say we've always been red, white, and blue.
Had to make up for the Marine song.
That's all right.
I know the Army guys love it when I play the Marine song. There's like no really good Army songs, though. Are there good Army songs?
There's a few of them out there.
I need you to send them to me. I need a better Army repertoire.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You do.
That's it. More Marine songs. Oh, man. Okay, so We were talking in the break that sometimes this information isn't what the men and women who have served need all the time, but a lot of times it's their relatives, their friends. You know, hey, I have a neighbor. They serve. They've got all these problems. They don't know. You know, I want to help them. They can come to your office too. They can't file a claim for them or anything like that.
Correct.
But if they were sent to your office, How does that help?
So what we'll do is we'll kind of sit down and give them the generic information.
Sure.
Excuse me. Okay. We'll get the generic information out to them. The really important part is we need to see that veteran face to face at least one time. That way we can identify that veteran appropriately. We know that they exist, first of all.
Yeah, and you're filing a claim on their behalf.
Exactly. Exactly. And then, you know, once we see the veteran and we have a little conversation, if the veteran is, in a lot of cases, if the veteran's aging and it's hard to get them into our office, for instance, they're homebound or they're in a an assisted living facility or something like that, we can do what's called a third-party authorization for that friend or family member to be able to transport the paperwork back and forth between our office and that veteran, to get legal signatures and the types of things that we're going to need to make that claim valid. If they're in an assisted living facility here locally, our office has an outreach officer that will
go there.
Yeah, that'll absolutely. Nice. Yeah. Austin Salisbury is our outreach officer and he will go to that assisted living facility and meet with that veteran on site. And then from there, we can do that paperwork transfer and all of that.
Are you guys pretty typical of your basic service office? I know a lot of the offices in different counties maybe only have one person in them.
We're blessed in Shasta County. And I put a shout out to our leadership. We've got five service officers that are in office, and then I've got my outreach coordinator, Austin, that can go out. He reaches out to Bernie. He reaches out to the outskirts of the county. Plus he does all the assisted living facilities. So that we can get to those folks that can't get to us. The only thing that we can't do, and it's mostly for safety reasons, is private residence visits. That can get a little bit dicey. But if they're in a facility or
meet you at their local, whatever.
Yeah. You know, we're going to get to them. We're going to find a way to take care of that veteran. We even have a system where we can do telemeetings if they've got somebody that's techie enough to run it on their end to where we can meet with that veteran virtually and do virtual meetings. So one way or another, we're going to get to that veteran and make sure that whatever benefits are available, we're going to hook them up with those benefits and get that link going.
What's the time frame on something like that? I mean, I know I hear a lot of
horror stories. That $64,000 question.
Yeah. But, how's that work?
So that's a great question, Bill. I will start off by saying it depends because there are several different types of claims. And it depends on the number of issues that you're claiming. So if you're claiming 13 disabilities, the VA is going to likely require you to have a compensation and pension exam for each one of those disabilities. Oh, wow. Those are all done through VA contractors in our area because we don't have a VA run facility that can accommodate all of those. So once the claim goes out and it's in the hands of the VA, they're going to reach out to one of the four contractors that service the North State. And then we're kind of on their timeline to get all of that done. And then once those physicians, whether they're a nurse practitioner, a doctor, or whomever, once they do their examination, they send that information back to the VA. And then VA renders a decision if the exam is appropriate.
And are you notified at that point? I mean,
we're able to track that entire thing.
Okay.
Through the federal systems. It's called the Veterans Benefits Maintenance System or VBMS.
So you can tell them if the exam's been submitted.
Correct.
VA has it. And they're,
absolutely. They're we going have full access it. To it.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
So while that's going on, a more direct answer to your question, Bill, is what we're typically seeing on an average claim is anywhere from 4 to 8 months. It just depends on the types of conditions and how many conditions are being filed.
And if you can get the medical.
And if you can get the medical records and all of that.
Yeah.
Because
hot tip to anybody who's presently serving, if anything happens to you, get it on paper.
I have a sign on my desk and it literally says, but have you documented it?
Mm-hmm. Get it on paper.
Yeah.
Send it home to your folks, have them put it in a safe place. And
yeah.
I mean,
yeah, going back later, I imagine would be
sometimes
a nightmare.
Sometimes it can be.
Yeah. You know, especially
well, especially if it wasn't documented at the time.
Well,
correct.
Combat. So you have that issue. The other issue is at times I might have had crossed paths with somebody who was damaged by the military.
Correct.
And magically, those records disappeared. I mean, who would have thought? So they claimed none of those things ever happened. But then you go back and you need what they call buddy statements.
Correct.
But you only knew the guy's name was, you know, we called him Gunny.
Gunny.
Yeah.
I know, that's right. Yeah. Like, how many of those are there?
Yeah.
It's like gangsters. I've got a perfect example of that.
I had a veteran that had filed their own claim as they were leaving the Air Force. They were seriously injured while they were serving in the Middle East. They were sent to Walter Reed. They finally got out of there. And when they filed their own claim, they mistakenly sent all of their original records with that claim to the VA. And all of a sudden, they were gone. So the claim got denied. And we were able to track through the federal systems. We were able to track that there was a notation that they had received those records, but they never got uploaded into this veteran's file. So we advised this veteran to reach out. He was a newer exit from the military. Reach out to his peers that he served with, that fortunately he still had contact with, get buddy letters. And he brought back 5 buddy letters, and one of them actually produced a photograph of all 5 of them standing around his hospital bed.
Oh, there you go.
So obviously we won that claim in the end. Even though the VA had misplaced all of his records.
Misplaced? You're so kind.
It's political correctness, Aaron.
Oh, but we're in the cone of no political correctness. Yes, they accidentally misplaced it.
Yeah, well.
Mm-hmm.
So they, you know, ultimately we won that claim. The veteran was beside himself when he first walked into our office because he couldn't understand after spending, you know, time in Germany and then in the hospital and then being transferred to Walter Reed and spending another month there.
But they couldn't come,
come up with his records.
Yeah. Yeah, that's incredible.
But unfortunately, when he left the military, he took his original claim or his original paperwork with him, and that's what he sent to the VA. And it came up missing through the systems.
Yeah. Well, in defense of the system.
Look at you, Bill.
They have to process the you know, Walter Reed and these military hospitals have to process probably thousands and thousands of records.
Oh, I can only imagine.
You know, thousands of patients and one little fumble. And
well, and the other thing to take into account is that for the VA, they have the evidence intake center. It's one location.
Isn't it
for
in Wisconsin?
Janesville, Wisconsin.
Yeah, that's what I thought. Paul Ryan's old district.
But it is a single facility that intakes all evidence for every claim that is ever filed in the country and our territories. Mm-hmm. Everything goes through there.
That's in one location.
That's in one location.
That's
they have
like
one
the scan,
central
the scanning,
processing.
The yeah. scanning facility.
The so scan center.
God, if anything ever happened to that place, look out.
Yeah.
It's probably in the cloud.
Yeah.
So, you know, I can understand where things could potentially get misplaced when they're taking in the amount of paperwork that they do.
Oh, I can't even imagine.
Monthly, weekly, or daily process.
Mm-hmm. I guess we should also probably tell, like, I was, you know, I'm always thinking like, well, so maybe you don't know anything about this and you're starting from scratch. So the VA is a term we throw around a lot, the VA. Like, it's just like one thing.
Yeah.
And just hot tip, anybody who thinks that Secretary Collins, God bless him, is going to run out there and like fix it all magically, it's a north of 400,000 employees.
Yeah.
So, you know, I'm not sure which monumental task he would take up that would fix the whole thing in one fell swoop. But VA is multiple things. So you have VHA, Veterans Health Administration. That's the VA, right? So there's the medical side. Then you have VBA, Veterans Benefits Administration. So that's the claim side that you're interfacing with all the time.
Claims and education.
Yep. And, oh, yeah, right. We should go through that a little bit. And then you have cemetery.
Correct.
So it's multiple. I mean, they're almost like different.
And they're not automatically linked together by one magical computer system.
And they're absolutely not linked together.
They talk to each other.
No, they don't. Mm. No, so when – well, how much do they not talk to each other is if you are a veteran in Northern California, say north of Sacramento, and you go to visit relatives in San Diego and you have some sort of a thing and you go to the local VA facility because you – I don't know, whatever.
You're on the beach, you twist an ankle.
Yeah, there
you
and,
go. You know,
I'm
you
having
have
trouble
to go
coming
to,
up with an injury.
No, you're all right. but San Diego may not even be able to recognize you because all of your records are housed within the Northern California VA Healthcare Administration system. Hmm. Those can get transferred, but that's a process.
Right. It doesn't happen overnight. You
Correct.
Know, you go, you're traveling and, you know, you're in Ohio for a wedding. Something happens.
Correct.
And, but the thing that's crazy, and so not to say that this is normal because it is crazy at this point, we always have to remember, like, all these agencies started in the analog era.
Oh, yeah.
Like when we all started. So there were no computers. Then they had, you know, the giant computer. Then they had, you know, it's gone through iterations, but a lot of them wrote their own software over the years and have their own, quote, IT department. So they didn't go – there was no Microsoft. There was no off the shelf.
Yeah.
So they're all operating in these little silos of information, and they're not integrated yet. So unlike Medicare where you go anywhere in the country, show them your Medicare card, and you have access to healthcare.
Correct.
VA doesn't work that way.
Nope.
Are there plans to join that, or is it even possible?
They have had plans. Scott Blackburn, that we interviewed, he was the undersecretary during Obama, I think. It's been a while ago.
Yeah.
We interviewed him, and he was the guy who was going to do that, put that all together, and then his term ran out. And he was a great guy. His daughter actually is an Olympic hopeful in figure skating, by the way.
Oh, wow.
Shout out to Scott Blackburn. So anyway, good guy, and they have been working on it. But, you know, it's a little bit like if you think about it, you can't remodel your whole house while you live in it, you know,
right.
at the same time. You can't tear apart every room simultaneously. And that's what they really kind of have to do.
Yeah, you can't just shut down what already exists
and
while you're
rebuilding.
Process. Yeah,
right.
While you're rebuilding a new singular system, you have to kind of piecemeal it in, and then you've got to test it and make sure it runs and runs appropriately.
Right.
Before you can launch it.
I can't imagine how you would even start a project like that with many different.
I was kind of hoping the Doge guys could. You know, build that in the background because that is their expertise.
Yeah.
And I know that they are working on this, but it really is a need. It's a huge need. And I think would make your world a lot easier.
Oh.
Could you imagine?
Drastically.
People get out of the military and DOD computers talk to VA computers and you guys could get the records without doing a paper chase?
Well, in a lot of the branches now, with our young service members that are getting out, all the records used to go to the National Records Archives, which is a non-VA entity.
In St. Louis.
In St. Louis.
Yeah.
And then when you filed a claim, the VA would have to reach out to the National Records Archives and retrieve those, which is a great thought back in the day before all of the technological advances that we have now. The problem is that the VA is working a program now, or the national government as a whole, is working a program to transfer all of those new records directly into the VA's record management system as you exit the service, whatever branch.
Mm-hmm. That's super helpful.
But when I get veterans that come in that are Korea era, Vietnam era, those records are still housed at the National Records Archives. So by the time VA gets them, mind you, a lot of them were stored on microfiche. For those of you that don't know, that was a really, really old photographic way of doing things. And they're illegible in a lot of cases. Because if you remember the old microfiche films, they'd have hairlines in them and
don't you remember going to the library and having to use all that stuff?
Oh, yeah.
Well, we have to take a really quick break, so you have 2 minutes to look up microfiche. I'd like to give everybody a chore during the commercials here. You got something to do. Tide you over. If you're listening to the archive, of course, we cut that part out, so just forget it, because just listen to the songs. We'll be right back. You can find us at wethepeopleradio.us.
Bet that I stand ready when the wolf growls at the door. Hey, I'm solid. Hey, I'm steady. Hey, I'm true down to the core. And I will always do my duty, no matter what the price. I've counted up the cost. I know the sacrifice. Oh, and I don't want to die for you, but if dying's asking me, I'll bear that cross with honor, 'cause freedom don't come free. I'm an American soldier, an American. Beside my brothers and my sisters, I will proudly take a stand. When liberty's in jeopardy, I will always do what's right. I'm out here on the front lines, sleep in peace tonight. American soldier, I'm an American soldier. And I'm proud to be on this peaceful piece of property. I'm on sacred ground and I'm in the best company. I'm thankful for those, thankful for the things I've done. I can rest in peace. I'm one of the chosen ones. I made it to Arlington.
Yeah, in all seriousness, can't forget that part.
No.
At all. So, kind of put a little word out to all the people who have relatives, friends, and acquaintances who have been lost in service and who have served and are gone.
God bless them.
Yep. So let's go back to the National Archives, by the way, in St. Louis. I may have happened to had a phone call with the archivist at the St. Louis Archives probably 10 years ago, and there were some records that were being sought by somebody who was injured in the Army, by the Army, and those records could never be found, and it had already been 30 years. I mean, this had been a while. And I called periodically on behalf of this gentleman, and I finally get this different guy, his different voice, you know, and he's like, well, I've been here longer than anybody else at that time. And I was like, okay. I go, well, what about the fire? Could they have burned up in this fire you guys had? He goes, let me tell you about the fire. Okay. He says, yeah, well, the fire was in 1973, so your guy got out in 1978, so there's no way it burned up in the fire. I was like, oh, well, that's exciting. He goes, yeah, but there's more. He said, when that fire started, it was started by the employees of the National Archives. This is a little known fact. He goes, we don't publicize it, but they got behind. And the files had piled up, and they thought if they just burned a few of them up, they would have less to file. And it got away from them and burned, you know, part of the building down. So it was in – I don't have my note with me. Darn it. What was I thinking? But it was in 1973. So if a member – a service member has been discharged post-1973, there is no way you're – records burned up in the fire. So please do not take that for an excuse. It is not possible.
Correct. And we see that off and on.
Well, the other thing is they burned up all the Army records for people who were discharged prior to 1959.
Yeah.
So if you were discharged in the Army post-1959, even though the fire was in 1973, your records still exist.
Oh, really?
Correct. And Air Force was only letters Hubbard through Z. So Hubbard through Z prior to 1973 burned up. So the number of Army veterans whose records burned up are like infinitesimal, because you would have had to have been discharged prior to 1959.
Right.
So if there is a fire thing with the St. Louis Archives, you need to get more serious about that and do not accept that as the as your first, you know, your
well,
first
and also that kind of gives you an idea how many records are stored there.
I mean, Lord, yes.
Huge fire and tiny little bit of certain branches was burned up. I mean,
but I do hear from people, no Navy records. So if they tell you your Navy records were burned up in the archive,
right?
Epic fail. So you hear from people, you know, oh, well, I tried to get my records. They were burned up. I'm like, wait, what is your name? What branch are you in? What year? And you can narrow it down whether or not that's real.
Correct.
And you should.
No, you should never take no as gospel when we're dealing with the VA, the National Archives. Never take no as, oh, I guess I'm just out of luck. Because there are other ways and other facts out there that can help you get what it is you're looking for.
Right.
And that's super important to know. So there's like a million routes we could go. Talk about the education part of it, though. We did kind of stepped around that earlier.
Yeah, it's just one of the benefits that we assist our veterans with. So the veteran themselves is entitled to their GI Bill. As long as they have an honorable discharge, they lose their GI Bill benefits if it is less than the word honorable. If it's a general under honorable conditions, they are no longer entitled to their GI Bill. If it's less than that, you know, other than honorable discharge, bad conduct those just delete your benefits for education. So we can help the veteran navigate the VA system to apply for their education benefits. The other less known fact is if a veteran is service connected at 100% disabled, their spouse and their children younger than age 27 are also entitled to federal educational benefits. Mm. It's called Dependent Education. Yeah, Dependent Education. DEA. Dependent Educational Assistance. Sorry, I had to go back through my I had to go back through my own mental archives there for a second.
Back to acronym 101.
Yeah. And you know, we can help them apply for that as well. The state of California has a education benefit for the dependents of a veteran, that is more of an income needs based. It's not based on the veteran's household income. It's simply based on the student's income. It's called the California College Tuition Fee Waiver. And ultimately what it does is that any state college or university, CCCs, UCs, or CSUs, it waives the per unit cost for that university.
Oh, wow.
Which is a huge, hugely popular benefit for our students. And it was just last year that they changed the income threshold from the federal poverty line to the California poverty line, which is about $6,000 difference annually. More like $8,000.
California's making sure that we're poorer, so.
Yeah. So, and that, it used to be much more difficult because for the state of California residents to run on the national poverty line, good Lord, you'd have to be almost homeless or basically homeless to qualify in California for the national poverty line. So they changed that regulation in 2023, I believe it was. And now it's the state poverty line that qualifies. So, but those are the three that we mostly work with on those. And then there's also,
do they have to have a rating in order to get the educational benefit?
For the California College Tuition Fee Waiver, the veteran can be anywhere from 0 to 100% service connected disabled. And for those that don't know, yes, zero is an actual percentage. It's just a non-compensable percentage.
So they'll rate you, but they won't pay you.
Correct. For hearing loss is the most common one that you see.
Isn't that always like 10%?
I'm sorry?
Isn't hearing?
No, hearing loss
That's
can
it.
Be.
You're in the doghouse, Troy. Marine songs only from now on.
Hearing loss can be rateable at 0%.
Yeah.
And basically what that means is, yes, there is damage to your hearing that was caused by your service in the military. However, it has not reached a threshold to meet a compensable rating of 10%.
Hmm.
So I have a lot of veterans that have 0% for hearing loss, a lot of them. But as they get older and hearing diminishes, they can always file for increases on that as their hearing gets worse.
You can get an increase for your decrease.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, wow.
I actually had a veteran that came in that was rated 0% almost from the time he got out of the military. And he'd been out 30 plus years.
Wow.
We went through his records. We said, oh, you're already rated for hearing loss. And to me, that's a no harm, no foul claim, because now he's 30, 40 years older than he was when he got his original rating. So we filed the claim and came back. He's now 100% service connected for hearing loss and could have been rated higher throughout the years. Maybe not all the way to 100, but, you know, gradually increased over the years if they had known.
You can't change as time goes on.
Absolutely.
You can get a different rating.
Absolutely. If a condition deteriorates over the years, it can be increased to a higher rating.
And is that true with any of the medical?
Absolutely.
Oh, okay.
The thing to watch out for is if it does improve and you file the claim, they can also reduce that rating decision.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So that's where a lot of folks come in to our office. Well, I filed this claim and now they want to reduce me. And
because they filed it themselves.
Correct.
And you would have said, not your best plan.
Well, and a lot of people get frustrated because we ask for them to get some medical evidence before we file the claim, because we can go through the regulations, and we can kind of gauge where that's going to come in. Hearing loss is easy because it's all math.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's subjective to what the audiogram spits out when you go through your audiology examination. Whatever the numbers are, we can calculate those numbers. We can figure out exactly what that rating is going to be.
Before
we ever file the claim.
Right.
So people get frustrated because we ask them, you know, you're already rated 40%. Let's go get a hearing test before we jump on doing this. We'll put in what's called an intent to file, which saves the date.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So that they're not losing time in retro pay while they're getting that other hearing test. Because if they're going to go to the VA to get it, that may be 3 months down the road before they actually get an appointment.
Right.
But if we file that intent to file, that saves the date from the day they were in our office and gives us 364 days to file the claim.
Yeah.
And it still pays retroactively back to the date of that intent to file.
Hmm.
So I try to err on the side of caution, better safe than sorry, because it's harder to fight a proposal to reduce an issue than it is to get it right the first time.
And that's, I guess, why I really did want to do this. And just fair warning, we're in the last 2 minutes here. Can you believe it? Wow. I knew this would – I told you an hour isn't going to be long enough. We'll have to do this some more. But it is – it you know, I just can't stress to people enough. If you have questions, if you're trying to help somebody who isn't having any success filing a claim, they really need to go to their county veteran service office.
Absolutely, 100%.
And have you guys evaluate that and see maybe how you can – you deal with the claims all the time.
That's what we do for a living.
It's like anything else. You know, we can all fix our own plumbing, but how does that usually turn out?
Yeah, right. Yeah. For those that don't know, the County Veteran Service Officers, too, and I'll make this really quick.
No, it's all right.
We are fully accredited representatives. In other words, we've been through multiple academies. We've taken multiple legal exams to even get to where we are. So, you know, John Smith on the street that says, oh, I got my claim through successfully and I can get yours through. not necessarily the case.
And you know, the last thing here in the last 15 seconds, do not hire a lawyer first.
No.
Go to the County Veteran Service Office, and then if it can't be unscrambled from there, you may need an attorney. But if you go to an attorney first and you get a retro pay award, you will owe them. Troy Payne, thank you so much for coming in. We will do this again. So the County Veteran Service Office has been our focus the second hour. We'll do this again.
You're
listening to We the People. You can find us at wethepeopleradio.us.
I thank God for my life and for the stars and stripes. May freedom forever fly. Let it ring. Salute the ones who die, the ones that give their lives, so we don't have to sacrifice all the things we love, like our chicken fried and cold beer on a Friday night, a pair of jeans that fit just right, and the radio.